guys, just a quick few words before we begin. This interview was recorded on Tuesday, the 27th of June, a few days before the nothing burger comments by CNN's Van Jones regarding the Russia collusion accusations. I'm sure our guest, who has a very different view on Russia and Putin, would see these comments by the mainstream media as their Russia narrative is collapsing in a very different way than simply just taking all of this at face value. So we weren't bringing that particular issue into the conversation today, but it is an interesting interview. We don't see eye to eye on all the issues raised, but in a time when so many of the opposition to the mainstream media and the opposition to the globalists are all kind of looking in the same direction, it definitely doesn't hurt to have some dissenting voices looking in another direction. I do find it curious, though, that some of the criticism kind of lines right up with the accusations from the Rachel Maddows, the Adam Schiffs, and many of the others out there. So we'll see what you think. Leave comments and let us know what you think after you've listened to the show. So let's get to it. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here. This is Red Ice TV. My name is Henrik. It's a pleasure to have you with us, as always. Today we're going to have a controversial show for you. We have Christopher Jun Bjerknes back with us, and I wanted to bring him on initially on the show because National Geographic has a new show out called Genius. We did a review of it in our Weekend Warrior live show just a couple of weeks ago. And of course, he wrote the preeminent work on debunking Einstein. And he's actually, since we had him on last time, had two new books out on the subject. We might be able to mention those later. But however, when I wrote to Christopher, he told me that he actually had a new book out called Putin's Reign of Terror, The Permanent Revolution in Our Time. And the offer sounded too good to pass up. So I wanted to bring him on and actually talk more about this because it's a very important and as I said, I think to some people, controversial topic as well. So thank you for coming back, Christopher. It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me back. It's good to be back.
Excellent. So right here at the outset, I have a lot of questions. You've told me kind of about a little bit about the premise of the book. I know what it's about. I have not gone through the whole book yet. But tell me, or tell our audience rather, what you'd like to convey with the book. What's the main message that you'd like to give to people with this book?
That Putin is carrying out the reconstruction of the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union was broken apart during the Reagan administration when the neoconservative Trotskyites first came into power. And Trotsky forwarded the Marxist idea of permanent revolution, whereby communist forces would continually agitate to destabilize the world and create chaos so that they could then reform it in the communist model. And the Trotskyites then took over under the Bush administration and utilized false flag terrorism to create this chaos around the world and to embroil the United States in self-consuming wars that have hurt us very badly. The U.S. is no longer eager to fight those wars for Israel. So Russia is now stepping in to carry out Trotsky's permanent revolution in our time. And Putin, since the beginning of his ascent to Prime Minister of Russia, has utilized false flag terrorism to provide a pretext for Russia to expand its borders and to engage in wars throughout the region. And also, I believe, Putin utilizes ISIS terrorists at critical moments in political elections abroad to garner support for his favored political candidates who are anti-NATO and anti-immigration.
I think some of that will kind of sound like some of the sound bites that we've heard out of the mainstream media, and that's something I do want to tackle a bit later because, of course, we have these accusations, of course, that Trump is in with Russia, Trump has been colluding with Russia, they have been hacking our, the American elections, all this kind of stuff, and see where you stand on that and see what you think overall about the Adam Schiffs and what they're up to, because that's another side to the story as well, of course. But before we go in and talk
about your audience may not be aware of this, but I was saying that before the media picked up on it.
Okay.
Long before. Back in 2014, I was discussing this.
Okay, interesting. Let's.
And I was calling for congressional investigations into it. And it's not just Trump who's involved with the Russians. It was Obama who was involved with the Russians.
All right, interesting. Let's get into that a little bit more and see if then what they're up to is somehow legitimate, which would obviously be a very interesting take on all of this. But before we go there, Christopher, tell us a bit about the backstory. You were talking about the way that Putin came into power, right? Because we had Yeltsin initially. He was kind of a drunk. He was controlled by all these oligarchs, you know, the Berezovskis, basically after the collapse of the Soviet Union. These oligarchs have sucked up all the contracts and resources and everything else and made a lot of money on that. And the story, as I've heard it, is, of course, that they were betting on the wrong horse. The story about Berezovsky, how he basically took this old KGB agent, Putin, put him in place, and then he turned on them. What's wrong with that story, if you will?
He wasn't simply an old KGB agent. He was director of the FSB, which was the successor organization to the KGB. And he was director of the FSB at the time that two Jewish oligarchs, Roman Abramovich and Boris Berezovsky, made him prime minister to succeed Yeltsin. Yeltsin had become a sloppy drunk and was an embarrassment to them. And they needed strong leader to come in and secure their interests and increase their wealth. And they had seen that Putin was loyal to those people to whom he attached himself when he worked for the Committee for External Relations of the mayor's office in St. Petersburg. And he had a very corrupt tenure there. And when the mayor was charged with corruption, Putin stood behind him. So the Jewish oligarchs felt that Putin would be a good successor to Yeltsin because they knew that he would protect Yeltsin. They weren't so concerned that he would protect them. They were more concerned that he would protect Yeltsin. And the way that they garnered popular support for this man who was tainted by his relations to the KGB and the FSB, which are largely unpopular in Russia, was to instigate a war in Chechnya that would make him the glorious leader of the Russian people and rally the support of the Russian people behind him. And Berezovsky set up a scheme to have a couple thousand troops invade in Dagestan. I'm not sure the pronunciation. And Putin would then come in and quash this uprising, this Islamic terrorism, and take over Chechnya and appoint a new leadership in Chechnya that would be anti-West and favorable to Russia. And concurrently, the FSB, or KGB is what it really is, had instigated bombings in and around Moscow that blew up apartment buildings. And this was false flag terrorism that scapegoated the Chechens. So Putin began utilizing Islamic terrorism as a pretext to invade other nations. And he created the same terrorism that he was opposing. And the police caught the FSB planting additional bombs in Moscow before they were detonated. And several journalists were murdered reporting on that story.
So is that the proof that it was a false flag, the circumstantial kind of, well, the planting of bombs, of course, is pretty caught red-handed. But what else would you say to prove the point that it was false flags and not just Chechnyans?
Berezovsky gave testimony where he revealed the whole plot. He was actually the architect of it, and he coyly hid his role in that, but he pointed the finger directly at Putin and said that Putin was utilizing this false flag terrorism to promote himself and to gain dictatorial power over the Russian people.
So what was the, at the time then, obviously, Putin is fresh in at the time as president. You said that there was also maybe a psychological issue here, that they needed someone who immediately was seen as a strong leader, right? Because this happened in the wake
as
of him being
elected. As opposed to bumbling Yeltsin.
Right, exactly. So that crisis was something that strengthened him, which made him liked among the Russian people, correct?
And it worked wonderfully well. So he replayed the same thing in South Ossetia in Georgia, and he invaded in Georgia. When he went in and annexed Crimea, he sent in Chechens and proposed sending them in on both sides so that Chechens would be fighting Chechens in Ukraine. When the Sochi Olympics approached, he sent all the terrorists that were in Turkey and in Georgia and in Chechnya down to Syria to provide him with a pretext to go down there and fight them there so that they could never return to Russia. So it has been an ever-expanding utilization of these false flag terrorists who now control ISIS to spread crises around where he can then create military bases and take over territory.
So was that the point? I mean, because obviously the Soviet Union that lost some of those satellite states, and my take on the situation has always been that, you know, Putin kicked out some of these oligarchs. He was, yes, to a certain extent, trying to kind of, you know, stabilize the situation again. Because I always saw Western meddling in these satellite states. Like take the Georgia conflicts. I mean, Shakashvili was kind of in the pocket of the West. It's a very easy situation to say, you know what, it looks like the West is the bad guy here, trying to screw up the relations between Georgia and Russia, or for example, Ukraine and Russia. Is there not any truth to that, in your opinion?
There is truth to it, and that is what creates the destabilizing situation that forwards the Trotskyite permanent revolution. You have to have two opposing sides in order for things to become destabilized and reach a crisis point. So he's not only using Chechens against Chechens. You'll notice that the color revolutions to which you're referring were also financed and instigated by Jews.
Yeah, gold. Goldfarb was one of the one in the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, obviously. Together with, I think Berezovsky was funneling money to Goldfarb and some other people to continue that process, right?
I can't say that for sure. I haven't investigated that, but okay. My recollection is that it was Jews in the West who were financing and promoting the color revolutions.
Mm-hmm, right. And so that was to, you know, in my opinion, that was done as a way to destabilize the relations between Russia and the Ukraine to make sure that, you know, Russia didn't get back in a situation where they're on good terms with them.
But Stalin had broken up the demographic majorities of all of these countries by transferring millions upon millions of people out of their indigenous lands to the gulags, to the graveyards, and to other nations, so that they could later utilize this as a means of saying, hey, you're persecuting Russians, so that Russia therefore has a right to come in and intervene. So what they were doing with these color revolutions is creating a stress factor which would legitimize Russian intervention.
All right. So where are you on the situation of, like, let's say NATO or something like that? Because obviously, you know, I've seen an equal... obviously bad behavior on part of the West of trying to impose, you know, their BS on the rest of the world. You know about the invasions, you know about their behavior, and it's them who's dictating the Atlanticists and everything else. And people, just as you say, have suspected that there's also Jewish interest groups behind some of those kinds of strategic policies and stuff like that. Are you saying that Russia is just kind of the other side of the coin to that, that Putin is just kind of continuing this process and ramping it up? Without him in its place, they wouldn't have as clear as an opposition, and this would not lead then to destabilization. Is that what you're saying?
No. What I'm saying, again, is this is not just Putin. This is Trotskyism. And what happened with NATO was the false flag terrorism that took place on 9/11 provided a pretext for them to reorient NATO from defending Europe and Western civilization from Russian communism towards fighting Islam for the benefit of Russia and for the benefit of Israel. And NATO has only invoked Article 5, calling on member states to support a member state militarily in Afghanistan. Now, Afghanistan is an Islamic nation and an enemy of Russia. So the only time that NATO has gone to war has not been to defend Western civilization from Russia, but to fight a war for Russia that benefits Israel. So the Trotskyites commandeered NATO and turned it into an anti-Islamic, pro-Israel, pro-Russian force, instead of its original mission, which was to protect Europe from communism. If NATO were fulfilling its mission, Greece, for example, could invoke Article 5 and wage war against the EU, which is undermining the sovereignty of NATO member states. NATO should be invoked to fight this communist agenda of destroying the homogeneity of these nations and their national sovereignty instead of fighting Islam for the benefit of Russia and Israel. Mm-hmm. And Russia and Israel profited tremendously from these wars that the Trotskyites invoked, because Russia was able to benefit from the rising oil prices and utilize those additional funds to fund its military buildup that has made Putin one of the heroes of Russia that he is today by investing heavily in a military buildup. And it was Saudi Arabia who, one, helped bring down the Soviet Union, and two, helped stop Putin's expenditures on military procurement by lowering oil prices. And we see the alt-right, we see the Republicans who have been commandeered by the Trotskyites trying to scapegoat Saudi Arabia for many of the ills happening in the world because Saudi Arabia is an enemy of Russia, not because Saudi Arabia is an enemy of the United States.
Yeah, we'll detail what you mean when you say the alt-right and whatever, because obviously a lot of the people in the real alt-right, not the alt-light, have been very critical, of course. Actually, the alt-light, too, of the Syria invasion and that kind of foreign policy. But let's back up a few steps.
That's pro-Russian.
Okay. Trotskyites and the neocons, what happened there? Because obviously part of it, the way that I saw it was that actually under Stalin, many of them fled, right? They fled to the United States. They had to get out. There was some pogroms or whatever, maybe understandably.
You're talking
after
about the
done.
Jews emigrating out of Russia.
Exactly. That this movement is, of course, what transformed into the neoconservatives eventually in America, right? They talk about that a little bit and how... Are you saying that they didn't just flee from one country to another? They stayed in both.
The neoconservatives came from Jews who came to the United States long before that took place. They were Russian immigrant Jews, but they were not Russian immigrant Jews who fled when Nixon started to open up the Soviet Union for emigration out of Jews. That was around 1971. And got progressively greater all the way through the Carter administration.
And then what happened here, of course, is that
the Jews who set up neoconservatism were Irving Kristol and Leo Strauss. And Leo Strauss is noteworthy for saying that it is the duty and the right of government to lie to the people and manipulate them into taking whatever actions the leadership deems necessary. And Bush lied a lot to get us into wars in the Middle East.
That's true.
And yep. Irving Kristol was a Trotskyite and promoted the idea of having destabilization and the idea that chaos is good. And another neocon was Ledeen, I think Michael Ledeen, who said that chaos and destabilization are good because they provide for opportunity for change to remold things in the form that they would like them to take.
I definitely agree with that. I think that what I guess trying to get closer to is this issue that when the neoconservatives came into the position that they were, we've heard these stories that they absolutely hated Russia, right? They wanted to work against them at every step of the way. But you're saying that's not true. Russia has been used.
That was to set up. That's what Reagan did, was to set up the fall of the Soviet Union, which had been predicted much before it happened by a former KGB agent named Anatoly Golitsyn in his book, New Lies for Old. He said that the Soviet Union would fake its breakup so that it could gain access to all the resources of the West. And once it had done that and corrupted the West into a point of crisis, it would then secure not only the former Soviet Union, but all of Europe. Now, that exact same situation had been predicted in 1962 by the first Prime Minister of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, who was interviewed for Look magazine and asked what the world would look like in 25 years. And he said that Europe and Asia would form a Eurasian Soviet Union. And that is what Alexander Dugin and Vladimir Putin are setting about to reconstruct. And they are trying to destroy NATO and utilize the anti-Zionist movement to create a tension between Israel and the West in favor of a Russian-Israeli alliance, the alliance of a communist-Zionist axis that will cut off Europe from all the energy resources of the Middle East. So the anti-Zionist movement was created by the communists to create a tension between Israel and the West in favor of a Russian-Israeli alliance.
Interesting. So NATO in this equation is, do you see that as an actual viable counterweight to this?
Absolutely, because they control enough nuclear arms to prevent any kind of major war. Mm-hmm. But they have to pursue their original mission. Now, Trump, working for Russia, is trying to turn NATO's mission into fighting Islam, fighting Putin's Chechen and other Islamic terrorists in ISIS. So Putin is creating the terrorism to provide the pretext for NATO to be redirected away from protecting Western civilization from Russian communism into favoring Russia and Israel by destroying Islam. And the very first and only time that NATO was utilized militarily was to attack Russia's enemy, Afghanistan, after Russia failed to defeat Afghanistan.
That's an interesting part in history and how, of course, how that was used afterwards, with 9/11 and all that stuff. But let's try to get this.
It was 9/11 that triggered that. That was utilized as the trigger to trigger Article 5, was 9/11, which was set up by the neocon Trotskyites in Israel.
That's correct. So let's talk about Syria as a microcosm here, because obviously what I've heard is that Russia has actually helped to fight ISIS while America has been funding them and making sure resources ends up in the hands of ISIS, where Russia seems legit to try to actually take out ISIS, though, which has been a problem. But you're saying
Russia sent the terrorists into ISIS just prior to the Sochi Olympics. You can look up. There are numerous news articles that are quoted and cited in my book that show that the Chechens were sent just prior to the Sochi Olympics to get them away from Russia. Now, it doesn't make sense because they simply should have liquidated them. The press reported that the FSB, the KGB, was financing and organizing and carrying out this transfer of Chechen troops to Syria on the pretext that this would prevent them from interfering in the Sochi Olympics. Putin then utilized that situation, which he deliberately created, as a pretext to go down to Syria and create Russian military bases in occupation of Syria to fight these terrorists that he had created. But it was a false flag scam.
But so there's no kind of real conflict then, in a sense, that's what you're saying, between
there is a real conflict, which is grinding up Syria for the benefit of the greater Israel project.
Oh, no, sure, definitely.
What they're going to do is balkanize Syria, and Putin and the Soviet Union will create an iron curtain all the way around Israel. Throughout the whole Cold War, the Soviet Union had sponsored the Islamic enemies of Israel, which provided a pretext for the American-Israeli alliance, where America armed and defended and fought wars for Israel. They now want to flip that and create a Russian-Israeli alliance where Russia will dominate the Islamic world and create an iron curtain around Israel that will protect it from any Muslim reaction to the Israeli establishment of a new temple on the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock by the Wailing Wall. They want to construct a new temple and anoint their Messiah there, which will create an enormous reaction from all of Islam, because the third holiest Islamic site is there, the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque.
So we're just
Russia is setting up to defend Israel the way the U.S. had.
So we're just being played like both sides here, really. It's theatrics to a certain extent, then, because we have a controlling hand behind it.
They refer to the, quote, Zionist West, and they pretend to be anti-Zionist, but only to create a wedge between Israel and the West so that Zionism and communism can reunite under a Russian-Israeli alliance. And that is the fulfillment of Jewish messianic prophecy, is to have a world government. And when David Ben-Gurion, who I quote extensively in my book, discussed all of this back in the 1960s, he said that the Soviet Union would fulfill the role of the Jewish world government controlling the Gentiles, and that Israel would then rule the world from Jerusalem with this international communist army guaranteeing world peace, which means that no nation will have any military forces with which to attack Israel.
Interesting. So, you know, for those that are like trying to understand it, it's obviously a little bit more of a multi-dimensional kind of a strategy here than just like what you read in the news and whatever. Because I think, you know, Christopher, that when people see the ridiculous accusations in the mainstream press, like, you know, CNN, we just had, I mean, there's so many sources now coming out from the Western mainstream about basically how Russia is behind everything. I can't take any of that serious. I can't take the Adam Schiff's serious. It's like a big, it's just big hot air. I haven't seen any proof for any of this yet.
That is the goal, to create a process of KGB demoralization. You'll notice that none of this happened prior to the election, and it should have happened. And that is why Trump is now crying foul. He said that Obama had all of this information prior to the election. Why the hell didn't he do something about it? Well, the reason he didn't do anything about it was so that they could create this conflict post-election, whereby people became so demoralized that they had no means of discerning in a rational way what is true. And you see the media accusing Trump of iterating false information, and Trump accusing the media of being fake news. Mm. And this is classic textbook KGB demoralization of target nations that they want to destabilize. So we are now in the midst of a communist destabilization of the West. And another group that is promoting this destabilization is the conflict between neo-Nazis and Antifa. And Antifa, in its modern form, originated in the Soviet Union under Stalin during World War II by the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee. And they are now staging conflicts in the streets. And it is always the goal of the communists to create a crisis in a society where the society can no longer function and where the institutions of stability in the society are undermined. So the communists are undermining both our confidence in our media and our confidence in our government. And that is what is so alarming to me, that this is such a broad push taking place now, to the point where people who are very intelligent and very aware of what's going on, such as yourself, can't make heads or tails out of it.
And I just think it's all bullshit, you know, because of what I've seen the mainstream media present so far, it's nothing there, right? So I obviously get the impression.
What do you mean by there's nothing there? We had Paul Manafort. We had many people in the Trump administration with close ties to the Russians. That's not bullshit. That's real.
Yeah, but take like the, for example, with General Flynn, for example, right? The accusation that he was somehow, you know, in a back end deal or whatever. The only thing that was explained, the only thing that was about was a presentation at RT. They were sitting down at the same table together. Putin and Flynn never talked. You know, they were at a dinner together. Putin made a speech. Afterwards, he was told, well, there was an old general there or whatever, yada, yada. Nothing, no proof was said that, well, they got together. They talked about this. The same thing with these ambassadors. It's like, well, you were going to have ambassadors meeting with other people.
When was
from other
the
countries?
Last time you were in Russia meeting with Putin in front of RT? You speak of these things as if they're normal and not unusual.
Well, he's a statesman.
And if you
he meets thousands of people, obviously. He's a statesman, right?
Not necessarily, no. He's confronting an enemy of our country, and he is a military man, and he should approach it with that sensibility, that he is in the midst of people who want to do us harm, people who have nuclear weapons pointed at our families and pose an imminent danger of the extinction of our nation. He should not be chumming it up with our enemies, nor should many of the other people who are very closely allied with Donald Trump, including Mr. Kushner. And Mr. Kushner and Jeff Sessions should have disclosed all of their meetings with the Russian ambassador and the fact that Kushner was trying to establish back-channel communications with the Russians. These people are our enemies. This is outrageous. And the alt-right has become so anti-Western and so anti-American that you can't even perceive how horrendous this behavior is, when 30 years ago, the average American would have immediately reacted that this is all treason.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what Russia is. I mean, this is the thing. It's all about identifying who they are in the situation. What do they want? Are they truly anti-Western? Has that not gone away? I mean,
Alexander Dugin and Vladimir Putin have said. Putin said that the fall of the Soviet Union was the greatest catastrophe in modern history. Mm. Dugin has said that all of Europe should be vassal states serving the Soviet Empire so that Malta is not only reestablished, but that Russia can face absolutely no enemies or threats whatsoever. They are deliberately undermining us to create a situation of security for themselves. That makes them our enemies.
But obviously people, what they will hear with this is that you're basically agreeing with the mainstream news, and that would be their beef.
No, I'm agreeing with facts.
Right. Yeah, but I'm saying
facts should have come out prior to the election, and they did not, mm-hmm. which proves that the media is in on this process of demoralizing Americans. I was putting out those facts before the mainstream media was. Mm. And I quote sources in my book who were alarmed as I was that the mainstream media was overlooking all this. There was an article in Mother Jones News where the man was flabbergasted that Hillary Clinton had said that Trump is colluding with the Russians and that the Russians were hacking the election, and the mainstream media didn't cover it and didn't make it a prominent story. And he couldn't believe that that was taking place. He thought that should be front page news around the world, and it wasn't. Now, after the election, they're jumping on everybody to confuse the American public and to turn us against ourselves and divide us.
Yeah.
So it appears to me that this was done deliberately so as to create a situation of conflict.
Now, this is something I've always felt, and I agree with you definitely on this point, that, you know, when I've been watching RT, for example, and I've said this for years, Lana can attest to this, I've always said, it's almost, you know, I've had this idea that it's almost that they want to bring insecurity to the American psyche, right? They always hammer on stories which undermine credibility of the American government, you know, and undermine the credibility
of the American government for what other people are doing.
Exactly.
That has always been a communist tactic, is to blame America and the CIA for everything that Soviets and KGB have done.
And at the same time, then, I can't help to agree with those sentiments, because the West is corrupt. It is owned. And we know those things. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like, yes, I understand
that
we have an enemy over there.
No, RT does not say that Israel and the Jews and the Jewish bankers run the media in America and are doing to forward the interests of Israel.
That's not what I'm saying.
And that's what the truth would be.
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm saying.
They're misdirecting you.
I'm just saying,
they're misdirecting you so that...
Listen, man. No, I'm just saying that with the knowledge that we have on our side, we know how corrupt the West is. We know who's ruling that and stuff like that, right? So I can't help to agree when that's being criticized, if you see what I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying that it is a misdirection and a falsehood by not including relevant information mm-hmm. that would allow the American people to understand the forces that are corrupting it.
Sure.
When you say it is corrupt, you're speaking in a kind of a passive voice, which deflects attention from those who are corrupting it. And those who are corrupting it have also corrupted Russia. Why isn't RT focusing on Vladimir Putin's tens of billions of dollars and his kleptocracy, where he allows his Jewish friends, such as the two young Jews that he grew up with, Arkady Rotenberg and his judo coach, Racklin. Rotenberg's become billionaires. Many Jews have become billionaires under Putin. Now, when the Russian media has tried to cover it, and he sends out assassins to murder those who do.
Let's talk about that for a little bit and get into the backstory. Let me pull up an article here, for example, because you mentioned this to me before we got going here. It's basically called Vera Putina's Lost Son. Let's talk a bit about who Putin is, where you believe that he comes from, and ultimately whose interests he served. Try to prove this to our audience if you can.
Well, Die Zeit, which is a very well-respected German news organization, published an article fairly recently which recapitulates a lot of information that has been forgotten that several journalists tried to get out around the year 2000 when Putin was coming up for election. There was a woman named Vera Putina, who said that Putin was her illegitimate son. And there are school records for this child, Vladimir Putin, in the community where Vera Putin lived. And she had photographs of him, and she offered up the idea that there should be a genetic test that she could prove genetically that she is Putin's mother. And the KGB came down and intimidated her and confiscated her photographs and harassed the community and her family to the point where she will no longer discuss it. But in 2000, there were two prominent journalists who were going to report on this story, and they both died under suspicious circumstances. Well, one was obviously assassinated, and the other was in a plane crash that took out not only him, but many of the associates he was working with who opposed Putin. So it appears that these journalists were murdered before they could expose the story of Putin's true roots.
Would it just be, in your opinion, kind of, it would be a done deal if we could prove that he's not what he says he is, right? That there would be enough on a genetic level to prove that he's a son of this lady, and she, I guess she's Jewish, the lady? Is that correct?
No, I don't believe she's Jewish.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. She looks a lot like him. No, that's not the tack that I'm taking on this. Okay. I'm just saying that Putin deceives people, lies, and in 2000, this was a very relevant issue to his election. With RT and his corruption of the media in Russia, he's very popular now, and it's a different situation. He would have the means to obstruct Russians gaining information about this story, and I don't think he would ever consent to a genetic test, so it's a moot point. But she, not me, offered up the idea that there should be a genetic test, and she was certain it would prove that he is her son.
Okay, interesting. So how would that change the dynamic? It would mean that he's just basically a puppet. He's being just controlled. He's a person we don't know who he is. We don't know about his background. We don't know where he comes from, etc.
No, it is a revelation into his character and his use of terror. And that fit in with my theme in the book that Putin is utilizing Trotskyite terror to maintain his power and grow his empire and to put people into power in other nations who favor him. And in my book, I give many examples of how there is frequently a spate of ISIS terrorism just prior to major elections where his candidates are up for election. And those terrorist acts always benefit his candidates. And another thing that I address in the book is, for example, Galloway and Corbyn, hard leftists and anti-Zionists in England. Corbyn is very pro-Putin. So we see that this anti-Zionism is used to drive a wedge between the West and Israel in favor of a Russian-Israeli alliance. And it takes place from many angles.
Tell us more about what that would mean. Let's talk about the situation in Europe a little bit now, of course, with increasing Islamic influx. We have terrorism at a fever pitch rate at this point.
But it's Putin that's inspiring much of that terrorism. And the influx of immigration was brought about largely by Angela Merkel, who is an old friend of Putin. So I am postulating the theory that they are creating these crises so that they can then propose the solution. And what is the absurd solution that they propose? Dismantle NATO and succumb to Russia. Mm-hmm. When it should be, NATO should be focused against these EU forces. NATO should be attacking Merkel as a communist subversive of a NATO member state.
Yeah, they will never do that, obviously, because they're in on it.
I wouldn't say things like that. That's defeatist. They must do something like that if the white race is to survive. We cannot survive by embracing the very communists who created this crisis so that they could propose an anti-Western solution to the anti-Western crisis they created.
Interesting. So that would basically mean then that let's kind of run through with that scenario a little bit, because that's interesting. At what point do you think that if things go through as they plan it, would Russia be proposed as someone who would restore order, if you will, in Europe? Would our, you know, nations kind of not be able to take, you know, deal with the level of terrorism at that point, and we would seek external help, but not turn to the NATOs? We would turn to the Russia, for example.
There are two things happening which I think are revelatory and can explain the answer to your question. Russia is now set up Erdogan in Turkey to be anti-NATO and to propose a false dilemma to Europeans. Either you allow in the Muslim hordes and support NATO as an anti-Muslim fighting force, which is absurd, or you vote for pro-Putin candidates who dismantle NATO. Now, you see the same thing taking place in Greece with both Syriza and Golden Dawn. They are both anti-NATO and pro-Putin. So they are creating this bloc which will cut off Europe from energy, and they are pitting Greece and Turkey against each other, both NATO member states, as a means of dismantling NATO. Once they have dismantled NATO and put in people who are pro-Russian in government, they may or may not invade. Or it seems that they want to spark kind of crises between the Muslims who these politicians will then try to chase out and between neo-Nazis and Antifa, so that society becomes so confused and dysfunctional that they will welcome in the Russians as a quote-unquote stabilizing force, just as he tried to do in Ukraine, in Crimea, and successfully do. He did it on the pretext of those Russians that Stalin had put in, but he will find other pretexts. And one of the pretexts that he is doing by duping the alt-right is creating a pretext that they are fascists. He doesn't call them Nazis because Nazi means National Socialist. And the communists generally don't refer to the Nazis as Nazis because they believe it taints the word socialist. So he incorrectly calls them fascists. And he is trying to create a destabilization by pitting Antifa against his fascists. And he is sponsoring fascists. Well, in Russia, he rails against Germany and portrays himself as if he's the new St. George fighting the Nazis. And he hosts massive internationally seen parades against fascism and against Nazism. So where is this hypocrisy that the neo-Nazis support Putin, who hates them and says that he will destroy them at home while supporting them abroad? And where, how can people justify Putin's hypocrisy in supporting neo-Nazis abroad while conducting anti-fascist parades in Russia?
How is he supporting them? What's the proof of that?
The proof of that is their support of him, which is irrational. Why would Nazis support a KGB communist?
Well, again, they just see it as an anti-establishment position.
No,
right?
Anti-Western position.
Yeah. No,
and
exactly.
They're the West.
Yeah.
It's a completely absurd. Now, something absurd, you have to
is he funneling money
find your
into,
proof and who benefits from it.
Right, but is Putin funneling like resources and money or setting up conferences or something like that in Europe to fascist groups?
I suspect that he is, yes. And he has. And he has financed or provided loans to political candidates like Le Pen, who are called fascistic in the media, even though they are not.
Right.
But in Greece, you have very leftist Syriza supporting Putin, and you have anti-Zionist Golden Dawn supporting Putin. Why is it that this is the only thing that they can agree on, is that NATO has to be destroyed and Putin is our savior? That is so contrived and absurd that you find your evidence by asking who benefits from that. And obviously the only person who benefits from it is Putin.
Yeah, I think it's a really important position to take to make sure that we just don't walk into something just because it's beneficial, just because we have such self-loathing and hate ourselves. And I agree with you on that sentiment. I've always felt that. That is, like, much of it has been about undermining our own confidence, to lose our belief in our own system, our own countries, so that we simply will just walk away from it and let it rot from the inside and crash, instead of saying, you know what, let's go into the political system, let's steer this up in the right way and use the institutions that we have in place to take back control of our own countries again, right?
Yes, and there are also historical precedents which indicate that Putin is behind this. There was a communist neo-Nazi organization run by Czech intelligence, which assassinated someone in France and blamed it on neo-Nazism when it was actually run by the communists, the Kampfverbund for something. It's in my book. I can find it. There is also the historical precedent that Anatoly Galitzin said that the Russians would create these organizations to undermine the West and support the KGB. Now, when we look at the standard of proof, which is essentially what you're getting at, you have to have a very low standard of proof when dealing with the KGB because their entire existence depends on their concealing what it is that they're doing.
We were watching some of the footage, of course, from some of the protests and things like that has been going on. There's a couple of things that have happened, of course, in Russia with the clampdown, as you say, on certain groups has been ferocious. And I know that internally they have imprisoned people who are supposedly National Socialists, I believe. I've heard, you know, rumors of this, that there's, you know, again, they use those quotation marks, fascist groups in Russia, right? There's been very... Putin has gone after them, basically, jailed some of them, I believe, too. Briefly, before we take a break here between the segments, and then we'll talk a bit more about your book here at the end, too. But you mentioned this opposition leader, Alexei Navalny. Tell us about
Navalny.
Him. Navalny. Tell us about him a little bit.
I don't know all that much about him. I was just simply stating that he is the current face of opposition, and so is Kasparov, the famous chess player. But they are not allowed to engage in a truly democratic process to unseat Putin. And we as Westerners and sponsors of Western civilization ought to be concerned about that and not celebrating that. I find provides proof that these groups are being backed by Putin is their interrelationship, their constant promotion of communist and Bolshevist iconography, like, what's his name, Andrew Anglin. Opened up his website, Total Fascism. But when I looked at that website, it showed Nazi iconography, which is not fascist. And then it was showing Russian women in Bolshevik regalia and celebrating them, and celebrating Putin, who was the antithesis of everything that Adolf Hitler publicly stood for. Now, why are these people who are Westerners promoting an anti-Western agenda as if it will save us? They're trying to make us suicidal. They are convincing us to destroy ourselves because we are supposedly immoral due to the corruption of the Jews. Well, they promote a person who is in bed with the Jews, Vladimir Putin. How can that not originate from the people who are benefiting from this, especially when it's textbook KGB behavior?
Yeah, we got to get you on here, Anglin. We'll sort this out with Christopher here. No, but I think a lot of it too. No,
I would love to.
There is a lot of trolling. There is a lot of humorous things. There is a lot of things within the alt-right, which is, I get what you're saying, and I understand. But at the same time, it's a tongue-in-cheek thing. It's a way of making fun of it all.
He's not tongue-in-cheek in his support of Russia, and he supported Red China. And he has degraded the West, and many in the alt-right degrade the West. And I heard Anglin once saying that he didn't care much for the Bill of Rights. And another thing that goes on between the Russians and the Israelis is that the Russians don't care about human rights. So the Israelis view them as a superior ally to the U.S. because the Russians won't care if the Israelis genocide the Palestinians. And I've seen that in the Israeli press that, hey, maybe we ought to consider an alliance with Russia as opposed to the United States because they have no regard for human rights.
All right. Well, we can continue to talk more about it here in the second segment. So obviously, I think some of you guys out there will be interested in this and trying to find out more, both in terms to try to understand, of course, Christopher Jungbjerknes's position, but also, of course, I think that the very cautiousness that he's bringing here to the situation is a very valid one, and we should think about, you know, what we're doing. I get that point. So tell us, Christopher, where people can, obviously I have a link up here to Amazon. That's the best place to go if people want to read more about the book and pick up a copy. Is that correct?
Yes, please. Amazon is the best and essentially one of the only sites where you'll be able to purchase the book with relative ease and have it arrive at your doorstep quickly and efficiently.
Okay, sounds good. We're going to keep talking more about this, and of course we can see if some of you guys out there have some other input on this. Maybe we can have, that would actually be interesting, have a debate or something like that and see what their positions really are on some of this stuff. All right, folks, that ends the first segment with Christopher Jon Bjerknes. We get further clarification on some of the issues in the second segment here, second hour. I don't agree with some of the conclusions Bjerknes has come to. I will just have to find out a bit more what his position is, read some of the sources in his book. And obviously, we need to be skeptical about the mainstream, but also about the arising and fast rising tide of the opposition to the mainstream. We know how both sides are played and that the core usually controls the different wings of the beast, as it were. What I find curious, though, is that some of the conclusions line up right with the mainstream. I think it's important with dissenting voices, and frankly, I don't know who Putin is or what his agenda is or who controls him. We don't know much about the inner mechanics of Russian politics and who pulls the strings behind the scenes or even in the open, or what ideology Putin actually is pushing and what he actually believes in. Obviously, I think Putin is a smart statesman and would not deny taking benefit from playing a favorable rising tide to him in America. I think what Christopher does here is to argue that we cannot just look at the first level to things. We have to go a bit deeper. We have to understand that some of these guys are playing four or five levels down or moves ahead, whatever you prefer. And I think Christopher is asking us to think about who we are defending and aligning ourselves with. I think it's a wise attitude to have, just to think and also look more in detail about how this might play out in the future. I also know, though, that some of the Russian or pro-Russian and pro-Trump trolling that we've seen from the alt-right, more so from some of the more extreme ones and some of the light ones as well, that has been more about poking fun at it all and simply making the mainstream paranoid to try to get them triggered. For example, I know that Lana has put Russia or Russian on her Twitter account as a way to kind of get the mainstream journalist to pick up on that as proof that she's a spy or working to undermine America or something like that. It makes them paranoid, and obviously that is not true. But he gets the mainstream prostitutes in the media all rustled. And we like that. It's fun. And I think that Chris might, frankly, not understand some of the nuances of the counterculture and their affinity to Putin in all of this. What I'm saying is it's not all serious. We cannot take it all literally. To some, however, I think it might be, sure. But on par with, calling Trump the God Emperor, I think many knows that Putin is not a savior and they're not pushing him that way. They're only taking him in a favorable light because our politicians, our elite, our establishment is so anti-Putin, right? But we'll find out more about this in the second hour. Christopher shares some more of his research with us, but also sends us a warning about the KGB, communism, the destruction of the West, and those who seek to destroy it. So tune in at redicemembers.com. Sign up for a membership. It's only €5 per month. We have subs from 3 months up to 2 years, so sign up and support our work. Regarding some upcoming news, we have a live stream from Oslo planned for Saturday, July 1st at 3 p.m. Central European Time. That's 9 a.m. Eastern Time. It's a Skansen forum with some speakers. We are planning on bringing this to you live. Then on Sunday, we have the Weekend Warrior, a live TV show, only for members. We put it on Sunday this weekend due to the fact that the conference is kind of clashing with the Saturday live stream. So more info about all of this at redice.tv and also on redicemembers.com. Thank you for listening, guys. I hope you enjoyed this first segment. You want to find out more, sign up right now at redicemembers.com. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you after the break.
Stand up, all victims of oppression. For the tyrants, fear your might. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing if you have no rights. Let racist ignorance be ended, for respect makes the empires fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended, unless enjoyed by struggle carries on. The end. walls of hatred nor walls of stone. Come greet the dawn and stand beside us. We'll live together or we'll die alone. In our world poisoned by exploitation, those who have taken, they must give. And then the vanity of nations, we hope one earth hungers to live. Some of the brothers, sisters, for the struggle carries on. The internationality unites the world in song.